We ask for all commissioners to have their cameras on if they are able to do so during the meeting. If you need to step away, please let us know so that we can make sure that we maintain quorum. If you get disconnected, please let us know, okay? And rejoin as soon as possible, all right? Staff and presenters may turn their cameras on when they are speaking, and members of the public should keep their cameras off for the whole meeting. I will now start the roll call. Okay. Please,
Sounds good.
So please provide your name and role, and I'll go first. I'm Dr. Commissioner Wiley, and I am the chair, and I see Commissioner Kathleen.
Kathleen Callan, Commissioner. Thank you. Hello, everyone.
Nikki Vandermeulen, Commissioner.
Love it. I like how y'all rolling it out. I'm loving it. Casey.
Casey Edmonds Estes, Commissioner.
Righty then. Joe?
Joe Frost, Commissioner.
Kristen?
Kristen Witzling, Commissioner.
Alder JL and Commissioner.
JL Curry, Commissioner.
Make sure my screen isn't. Wait. Okay, who am I missing? Charge it to my head and not my heart. Lynn, Commissioner. Okay, there we go. I can see now.
Commissioner Lynn Olson, President. Present.
All righty then. Okay, and seems like I got everybody. Yeah. Okay. Moving right along. So. We're going to move to the approval of the minutes. So let's review that the last minute. Let's get it up. From July 25th, Thursday, July 25th. Unless we don't have anybody here from the public, do we? No.
We do have someone from the public, but they are not, didn't register for a public comment.
Okay. Okay. So we'll review the minutes. We have it on the screen to see if we need to make any amendments or anything of that nature. If my fan is bothering you, let me cut that off because I don't know how much feedback you're getting. One second. Okay.
I can't hear your fan at all. If you need it to stay cool, I didn't hear anything.
I couldn't hear it.
Same.
It was in my ear. It's like blaring. It was more me than anything. Right. Are there any amendments to the minutes? If no, I'd like to entertain a motion to approve the minutes.
So moved.
Second? Seconded.
All in favor?
Mr. Callis, second.
All right. All in favor? None
Aye.
Opposed?
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you. No public comment. Doki. All righty, any disclosures or recusals on the current agenda? No? All righty then. Yes, Joe, I see your hand. Commissioner.
Not really a disclosure or recusal, but just a point of order sort of question and request of the agenda and perhaps meeting notices. Like, are we still on the limited time frame, like 6:30 or 7?
I want to go with, we are on our scheduled time. Yes. We don't have any, we didn't extend any time today.
Okay. I was just curious if going forward on the agenda, I know for me with caregivers, it might just be nice to give the guesstimate end time on the agenda so I can schedule cares accordingly without disrupting the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Much appreciated.
All right. Thank you for that. Okay. Well, we're going to go to our new business, line item 84859, which is Parks and Open Space Plan.
Hello, this is Ann Freiwald from Parks, and hi, Lynn Olson. And hi, Nikki. I know a few folks on your commission there.
Hi, Ann. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, you too. So I wanted to just share some information about the Park and Open Space Plan. I have a brief presentation. Is that okay if I just go to that?
Sure.
Right. Give me a second here to share my screen. Of course, this is in the way. Come on now. Get out of there. There we go. Okay. So I just have a brief presentation and we can just talk about a few things with the Park and Open Space Plan. So we do these plans every 5 years. We have records going back to 1892 of folks sharing their thoughts about our park planning. So this has been a long time coming, and the system of tomorrow is dependent upon participation by Madison's residents today. So thank you very much in advance for your help on this project. The plan is a report that captures the existing state of the park system and provides a general recommendations for park development in the next 5 to 10 years. Key characteristics of the plan is that it is data-based with public input, census data, park use records, GIS mapping, et cetera. It is subject to public review. It is adopted by the Parks Board and the Common Council. And as I mentioned before, it is updated every 5 years. That helps us to stay current with changing recreational trends and demographics, and also helps us to stay eligible for park state and federal grants. We plan on completing this. We've been working on it for a bit now. We'll be going to the various city committees in early spring of 2025. So we have a bit more time here to take comments and make edits, and then we'll be going to the committees first of the year. Some things that are covered by this plan: community values, the demographic trends of the city of Madison, overarching vision and goals for the park system, gaps in the park system and facilities, and recreational trends. We do not cover specific improvements to individual park plans or facilities, because this is more of a 10,000 foot plan, an overview of the entire system. We don't cover Madison's bicycle and pedestrian system because that is more of the traffic engineering's bailiwick. And we don't discuss recreational programming by our partners, such as Madison School and Community Recreation. We want to grow with equity and fiscal stewardship and environmental responsibility. And this plan helps us to set our course to reach those goals. Stay connected with this final page here. The QR code will get you to the page. I'll show you what our current page looks like in case you're interested. This can be found on the Madison Parks site. If you just type in Madison Parks POSP into your Google search engine, it'll go right to it. You can do a bit deeper dive into the project if you'd like at this site. The old plan, I wanted to share with you just some of these are the recommendations from the 2018 plan, and we are currently planning on incorporating these 2018 recommended strategies into the 2025 plan. So these can be found on page 119 of the old plan. If you all want to take a closer look at these, I can for sure share them with Rebecca and she can share them with you. But some of the things that I think apply to this particular group is improving public access to the lakes, Strategy number two here, design park facilities to accommodate diverse activities and populations. The create equitable access and funding for parks, removing barriers to engagement. So there are a few things in here that I think are kind of directly related to you all, but things that you might find of interest, even if it's not directly related. So with that, my goal for meeting you with you tonight was to make you aware that this planning process was going on and to see if you have any immediate comments and to invite you to share comments with us if something we don't have to talk about it right now, but because I know it's pretty fresh, but as things come up and you want to share them with us, please feel free to text either myself or Kate, who is project contact is down here. Kate and myself are working on this together. So thank you for your time. I see that Kristen has her hand up.
And Joe, I think you were first. So do you want to go first and I can talk in a second?
Oh, either way is fine. Yeah, I guess I
can. Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so just a quick question. Like, does this plan also cover, you know, like updating, for example, the website for, like, example, indicating which parks have either accessible restroom facilities or accessible playgrounds? Like, I've even looked through the site, you know, and I see many of the parks indicate whether they have restrooms or not, but it can be helpful, especially for many of us present, you know, to know which ones have, you know, like bathrooms that will accommodate, you know, our wheelchairs, or especially like I'm in a power chair and that's a bigger vehicle, you know, of sorts. And it's nice to know kind of what features are available at each of the parks so that we can plan accordingly with like family or other outings.
So that could be a recommendation that is located in the plan, and I will make sure that it is.
Oh, thank you. Well, feel free, Kristen, to ask your question.
Sure. Something I've asked before to parks in this, like in Disability Rights Commission, is that I don't know that we create every park to be accessible. And I've been told in the past, like, it's too expensive, we can't do everything that way. But I would hope that there's some way to structure, I don't know, the next 5 years so that it can be more in line with helping every child be able to access playing on their local playground. Like, not every kid can cross, I'm on the north side, not every kid can cross Northport to go to to go to the park at Warner Park, the playground at Warner Park. And it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. I love it. And all our parks should be that way. So as we're building new ones or rebuilding what exists, I'm just going to like put another plug in for that, knowing that like it is more expensive and requires different kind of planning, but I wish that is something that we could do and would do.
I hear you, but I can tell you that we do not have resources. We have the, we're building one more accessible playground at Rheindahl, and that will be the five that we had planned on. I think I hear you, and I think we can work on things, but we cannot build playgrounds of that stature. It costs about $700,000, whereas typical playground is about $100,000. So I know that's disappointing, Kristen, but I'm just being real with you.
I appreciate it. And I am going to use every avenue I have to keep pushing for that, because I mean, Warner Park is not that near any housing. And so the areas where there may be more children who could access that might be a more useful, I love having it at Warner Park, honestly, but there may be places where there are more children who need access to that, who, where we can build it, who like closer in. I don't know exactly what this looks like, but I am going to use every avenue I have to continue to push for that, because there are a lot of kids that cannot access play equipment based on the way our parks are currently being built and designed and like rebuilt and designed. And it just seems a shame that that is something that we're investing a lot of money into beautiful new play structures without necessarily making them accessible to everyone who could use them. So I understand, and I'm going to keep saying it.
Lynn?
That's a great point. I think we have the capacity as a committee to take this situation in particular and say, what can we do? Who do we know? Who can we call and say, you know what? You have this great park over here. Why don't we get a pedestrian bridge? How about that? I'm done.
Thank you, Lynn.
And it, Nakia, I couldn't get the hand thing to work.
Go ahead.
I was, I think the plan looks good. I understand the financial issues, wondering if the city or if disability rights itself could write grants or focus on someone on grants that would cover some of these expenses.
We do pursue grants, probably not as much as we could if we had more resources to do so.
Perfect. I really appreciate all your work on this. Thank you, Anne.
You're welcome.
The good thing is we do have resources, Anne. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Lynn. I will say that we are, we do work on accessibility issues. Even if we can't build every playground accessible, we do try to make the parks themselves accessible to the extent possible. We're always interested in hearing other ideas about barriers that you all are facing or that your community faces and what we can help, how we can help to break those barriers down.
Yeah, maybe it's just even incorporating some accessible features at every park, because Wyndham Way Park was rebuilt like within the last 2 or 3 years, and there's not really any accessible spaces in it, which is such a bummer. So even just like anything, I like an accessible swing. I don't know, like something like a part that's not, that's more of like that impervious pavement paving instead of those little rubber chips so that people can get in and out more easily and more accessibly. I don't know, something. And I don't know if this is the kind of the thing that a subcommittee of this grant, of this commission could do, but I'd be happy to look into grants and like help with the capacity issue for that and like work on writing some with the support of other people, if that's helpful to Madison Parks and to this committee.
Lynn?
I'm sorry, I did not put my hand down.
Oh, that was a legacy hand? Joe?
I think even to Kristen's notes, which I really appreciate, you know, that even if we as a commission, you know, could ultimately possibly working together with, you know, parks and with city council, make a plan that when, you know, like updates are being addressed at parks, if, you know, there can be discussion and plans, you know, like based on funding and availability, like if the playground equipment is going to be replaced to entertain, you know, is there ability to add accessible options? Even small things like, you know, to even have a singular accessible picnic table at parks with shelters, you know, like I've gone to a number that do not currently accommodate that. And it might just be nice that if, you know, some of the tables are being swapped out or that to entertain, you know, some of those various and flexible options. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, Lynn seems to have her hand up again.
Yes, I do have my hand up again. So Joe brings me to another thought, and that is when the city, not the parks, is planning to install a park, would they be willing to consider access to that park when there are obstacles to little children or middle-aged children crossing said street to get to park? Thank you.
We do work with traffic engineering to improve access across streets. For example, we're working with them right now. We put a bridge in at Warner Park at the corner of Trailsway and I can never think of the name of that street. Where Trailsway takes a sharp turn at the end of a paved pedestrian path through the park that starts there. Anyway, so
it's Monterey Trailsway. Monterey. Yeah.
Thank you. That's it. Yep. And so they are going to improve the crossing, a crosswalk there, and then we will pave a path to get folks to the bridge. I don't believe we aren't continuing the path beyond the bridge, but Warner Park is getting a facelift in the coming, that southeast corner of Warner Park is getting a facelift in the coming, say 2 to 3 years, which will include paved paths, brand new athletic fields, new lighting, new pickleball courts. So we're doing a lot at Warner Park, but now I'm getting down to the details of a specific park. Just to answer Lynn's question, we do work with TE when we can to improve crossing and access to parks. All right, well, that's all I had for my agenda item. You guys probably have a long meeting ahead of you, so thank you for your comments. Do share additional comments that you might think of. Feel free to shoot me an email or Kate Kane or give me a call.
Thank you, Anne.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Anne. That was extremely valuable. Thank you.
Thank you, Lynn. We should get together sometime and chat.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye.
All righty then, we will move on to line item 84860, practices for inclusive meeting.
All right. I'm Rebecca Hoyt with the Department of Civil Rights, and I wanted to share with you all today kind of an in-service training about different best practices to create more accessibility in these virtual spaces. Nakaya and Melissa invited me to do this training for you all with the intention that, like, at the end of this, if you guys like the material, this could be things that we incorporate in this space, and also some advice to give to folks who are coming as guests to present. So my training style is very conversational. Please feel free to jump in, ask questions, make comments as we go through. I am going to go a little bit quickly just to be mindful of the time. But if there's any tech issues or access needs, please let me know. And hopefully I am sharing my screen with you all. Mm. Is that not accessible for anyone? Beautiful. Let me start with, I introduced myself with my name, but I'll also share my pronouns are she, hers. And just to model inclusion, I'm going to give a brief visual description. So for folks who are not familiar with this practice, if you are new to a meeting space, what a visual description is just describing what is seen in my little Zoom Brady Bunch box. So I am a femme presenting, fair-skinned person with curly brown and silver hair. I have green eyes. I wear glasses with dark frames and tinted lenses. Today, I'm wearing a red plaid shirt, and I'm sitting in my home office that has cream walls and lots of plants behind me. And the reason why I do that description is to give access to for folks who have visual impairments or who might be joining by phone. And so that's one thing that we can do just initially to help create more accessibility. So the to my next slide, let's see. Ooh, there we go. So on this slide is a picture. I'm going to give a visual description of this image as well. Of a table with a gray geometric pattern tablecloth. And on top of the table is bowls with blueberries and blueberry muffins and cream. And they're all kind of scattered about on this table. And the reason why I share this image is for a few reasons. One, there's no words on this slide, but as you'll see in a moment, it's a very effective teaching tool despite there not being text. And I use it to share with you about a metaphor called, you know, that it's like the blueberry muffin. So I credit this to Kathy Martinez, who was the director of the U.S. Department of Disability and Employment. I don't know if that's actually where it originated from, but the idea is that if you are going to make a blueberry muffin, you need to have all the right ingredients. And you need to add the blueberries to the batter before you put them in the oven. This is very important because if you try to add blueberries to a muffin after it's already been baked, what you really have is a muffin and then blueberries as an afterthought. So this is similar to the way we plan for access. We really need to center access at the beginning of the process and make sure that we are baking in access to everything that we do. And so, you know, we'll blueberry muffin our meeting and make sure that we center access as we go. So as we plan for access, we have to think first about, like, before we even meet, what's the information that we're sharing with folks about our meeting? And so usually we want some kind of meeting invitation or agenda that's going to let people know who's this meeting for, who will be there. When is the meeting? That's really important. Joe mentioned at the beginning of the meeting, it's helpful to know, like, when does it start? When does it end? How do I plan my life around it? And planning can be a little bit more complicated and time consuming for folks with disabilities. So we want to center inclusion there. We let folks know how they can join us. So is it a Zoom link? Is it coming in person? If it is coming in person, maybe we tell people where to park. Where is paratransit drop off? How do I enter the building? What room is it in? It's like through a building, maybe we want to include wayfinding signs to let people have an easy experience to reach us. And then another item is to plan the agenda in plain language. So I find this very complicated, and Giselle and I really try to do this with our agenda, but sometimes our city and most governments have, like, complicated names for projects and initiatives and things. And it doesn't always let folks who aren't familiar with our space know what we're talking about. So something that we have tried to do is include taglines. So if the name of an initiative is not very obvious about what it is, to include like a little one sentence about what that thing is. So, and I think this is something we could do better at with our agenda planning as well. So maybe when we talk about parks and open space plan, it could be something like a little sentence afterwards that says, this is a plan for renovating and revitalizing parks in the city of Madison over the next 5 years. So that way people don't have to know our secret language in order to participate or plan for our meetings. We also should include pre-reads and handouts that go with each item. So on our agendas, we do include links if there are materials. I think that's really helpful because sometimes it takes folks a minute to digest a topic, and we want to give you all time to read through any materials so that you come with like ready with your questions and you know what's going to be talked about and you don't have to absorb it and then respond to it all in the same 15, 20 minute time period. Another important piece is what should participants expect? So I like to give the analogy of, you know, let's say I've invited you to a party at my house. I've told you when and where you come over. And I left out the fact that it's a pool party. And so you didn't bring your bathing suit. Now you can't access, I don't have a pool, but if I did, now you can't access the pool because you didn't know to plan for that. So I think when we invite people to spaces, we should let them know what to expect as well. So that might include, we'll be sharing screens in our Zoom meeting, or this is a town hall, please come ready to engage, or there'll be a presentation. So let me know what I'm getting into, so that way I know what I need to ask for in terms of my access needs. And then lastly, every invitation should always include a contact of who to call if someone needs accommodations or has language access needs. So any questions on that pre-planning items? All right.
This is Melissa, joining in from my phone. Thank you very much, Rebecca. I really appreciate it. And I loved your pool analogy. That was great.
Thank you. So once you arrive to the virtual meeting, make sure your internet connection is good. For our meetings, if you can't join via a computer, you can always call in if your audio is not working. You can also be online and call in so that you can have both experiences. And then when speaking, position your face at an angle so that participants can clearly see your lips and your face. I have an aunt who every time I call her on WhatsApp, like the camera angle is like of her forehead and her eyes. That's not very accessible because not only is it not helpful for people who are lip reading, but so much of expression happens like in this part of your face. So there's a lot of communication going on and we want to see your faces. In our meetings, we are pretty flexible about cameras on and cameras off because we know that you're joining from your homes and other spaces, but really for accessibility to have your camera on whenever you are speaking, if you can, really increases the level of communication that's happening in a virtual space. So I'm someone who can't always have my camera on due to my light sensitivity, but I try to turn it on when I'm speaking and then I can go back to turning it off. That way you can see my face and we can participate together. Also, I don't know if anyone here has ever been to a Zoom call with the deaf community. But it is a beautiful thing because people let go of this like sort of capitalist idea of what you're supposed to look like on Zoom, where the hearing community sort of sits like this. We're very still, like we're not trying to let you know we're bluffing during poker. But so much communication happens with your body. Like, please like express yourself as I'm talking. I see heads nodding and smiling. Like all of that is communication and access. So please feel free to bring your whole self to your Brady Bunch box. when you are speaking, please introduce yourself. If you're comfortable, you can share your pronouns. That normalizes the use of diverse pronouns and provide a brief visual description. For groups like this, where we're all the same folks meeting regularly, probably not necessary that folks provide a visual description every time. But when we bring someone new into this space, we might want to consider providing that description. For example, a new commissioner, or if a guest is coming to speak to us, to ask them to provide a brief visual description. The other really valuable thing about saying your name before you start speaking is that if there's an interpreter or if someone is using captioning, that doesn't necessarily capture who is talking when. And so it creates a clear line of this is when Kathleen is talking, this is when Nikki is talking, this is when Lynn is talking. Because maybe before you ask your question, you say, this is Rebecca. I have a question about the presentation. And so now it's very clear who's speaking when. We do have interpreters joining our meeting, we always want to speak directly to the person who's benefiting from the interpretation services, not the interpreter. And that's really just a sign of respect because the interpreter is there to facilitate, not to mediate our conversations. If we have interpreters, you can speak at a normal pace. You don't need to talk like this just because an interpreter is present. One little tip though is proper nouns, so like names of places and people need to be spelled out in ASL. So while it may be very fast to say Milwaukee Street, the interpreter is actually having to spell that out. So take a little breath but if you're describing names of people or places so that the interpreter can keep time with you. We have really fantastic interpreters at the City of Madison. So I don't imagine there'll be a lot of times where we have to pause for an interpreter, but we should always be willing to do that so that everybody can access what's being said. Also, sometimes, especially in virtual spaces, there are like issues with, you know, people being on the right audio channel or things like that that happen with interpreters. So the best approach is for a meeting to come to a full stop so that those issues can be resolved. And then we move forward once they're resolved so that everyone can access what is being said and nobody is left behind, because this is about our collective liberation, and that includes folks who use a language other than spoken English. So in terms of the things that we say, we want to use plain language wherever possible. And I think this is also something that's very helpful to share with our guests, is to use plain language. A lot of the topics that are brought up in our meetings have a lot of technical jargon. And I think in our last meeting, when we were talking about traffic signals, I found myself going, oh, I'm so glad that they are explaining what this term is, because I am not a signal engineer. And so I use terminology like crosswalks, button, which may not be, you know, the same as like signal indicator or things like that. So what that does is it removes sort of the power dynamics of experts, and it allows all of us to engage. We also, wherever possible, use gender neutral language. So for example, we might say property manager instead of landlord, or other terms that are gendered. To some extent, we avoid metaphors, acronyms, slangs, and idioms, because those do not necessarily translate well through interpretation services. So my stepmom is, her first language is Spanish, and she speaks English really well. And one time she was telling me about how people shouldn't play with rocks when they live in crystal houses. And it took me a minute, but I realized that that was an interpretation of, you know, don't throw stones at glass houses. And so some of those things don't quite translate well. Also, a lot of slangs and idioms are really rooted in ableism. And so where we can just say what we mean is really helpful. The City of Madison is also committed to removing ableist language from the way that we speak and write. And so we don't use words like crazy, insane, lame, suffers from, high or low functioning, on and on. And so we will do our best, but please feel free to call us in if we make a misstep. And we can work together to model that in this space. Joe, I see your hand.
Oh yeah, I like all these points. And I just even like to, you know, share that, like, for illustrative, like, you know, though number four, like, isn't a problem for me, I also like to, for myself, you know, and as it's a learning curve, even for me with a lifelong disability, to learn, you know, ways to even express when appropriate, you know, like how do you communicate, for example, that I am a person with a severe neuromuscular condition, muscular dystrophy. Like, I'm just curious, you know, like even to learn what are some great ways to express that, you know, in a productive way that is appropriate to the situation. And I think, you know, like I love this as a teaching tool, you know, and even would love to take it to even some of my work, you know, like with my employer and other meetings.
Good. Well, we do offer free trainings, Joe. So if your employer would like to invite us.
Yeah, just curious, like with that phrasing I had, like I am a person with a neuromuscular disease, you know, like when using it to communicate some of the barriers I may hit, you know, like be a ideal way to communicate.
I think it's really personal. And so I always feel if you're talking about yourself, whatever feels right to you is probably the language you can embrace. When you're talking about a group of people, generally people use like identity first, so like capital B disabled, or people first, like person with a disability. And even that has some nuance depending on the disability community that you're speaking about. For example, the deaf community really embraces identity first language.
The autistic community.
Yeah, younger folks with autism really embrace identity first language. But then there are some communities, generally folks over, I'm going to say 40 with developmental disabilities tend to really embrace people first language. So when in doubt, ask somebody. When we're talking about groups of people, for me, I use them interchangeably because I want to provide inclusion and recognize both populations.
Oh, thank you for sharing that, because I always appreciate, you know, that it's always nice to even enhance my own, you know, skills and ways I express, you know, to be the most inclusive.
Absolutely. And I've definitely referred to myself as disabled and had non-disabled people go, you can't use that word. So, again, it's very personal. So, you know, we do the best we can and we try to provide the inclusion that we can.
Well, much appreciated for giving that insight.
Sure. So in terms of visual information, I think this is something that might be really helpful to guests of our group. Here are some tips for inclusive PowerPoints. You'll notice this PowerPoint is not very fancy. It's very bare bones, and that's intentional. So one is to use high contrast color scheme, like black and white. Really is the best, you know, two colors, non-colors out there. And then for PowerPoints, to use large font. So 44 points for titles and 24 to 36 points for information. You all know I used to work at a law firm. They do a lot of legal trainings. And so sometimes folks would say, but how am I going to fit all of my information on a slide if it's 24 points? And my response to that is, if you are just reading your PowerPoint when you're presenting, you're probably not providing a very dynamic presentation. And you may want to think about the style of which you're sharing information. Maybe that document is a handout and something else goes into your PowerPoint. Also, minimal information per slide. We want to just really get to the main points. Pre-reads and larger documents can always be attachments. And use standard slide transitions and avoid decorative fillers. So I took a course where, you know, everything, it's online, everything gets presented real time in Zoom. And there was this like strobing graphic that would come up every time there was a pop quiz. And I was like, why are you doing this to me? Because immediately my vision gets blurry. So, you know, we want to just, it probably looked really cool for some folks, but for me, it was very jarring. So just regular transitions. We don't need a lot of fluff. Just give us the info. When you have a visual, like a map or a photo, or a graphic, provide a brief visual description. In notes, you can provide a longer description of that graphic, but as demonstrated earlier, we've described the photo of the blueberries on the table. That's really all that's needed, and it takes about 20 seconds to do or less, but it makes sure everybody has access. We also suggest using numbers instead of bullet points. This is for two reasons. One, if you are using an interpreter, they're going to let you know what bullet point it is. And I'm showing my fingers, finding 1, 2, 3. And also, if someone has a question, it's much easier to go, I have a question about number 5, than it is to try to like count down and figure out, is that the right one? So it's just much more straightforward. Let participants know if your presentation includes audio or video before you start playing it. That gives folks an opportunity to adjust the volume on their end and is sensitive to folks who have sensory input issues. So. Any questions? Should I keep going? Okay, I'm gonna roll on. When you are screen sharing, we want to zoom in, like the page should be bar to bar so that the graphics and the font is readable. Avoid high speed scrolling. So very ginger, low rolling. Sometimes it can be almost a strobing effect if you're scrolling too fast and it doesn't give folks the chance to read what's on the screen. If you do plan to screen share, provide materials in advance. A lot of folks who use assistive technology use another screen or access those materials in their own software so that they can use their AT. When we screen share, we eliminate the ability for folks who are viewing it to use assistive technology. So it's important that people have their own electronic copy of that material. And it also gives folks that extra time to digest things. I always feel like it is such a language of love to get a meeting invite that has materials attached to the appointment slip. It lets me know that I am seen and cared for. So I want folks to have the same experience with us.
Becca?
Mm-hmm.
This is Kathleen. I'd also just, I'm loving this. I'm loving this. But just to also to add about when you're sharing that material ahead of time, making sure that it is accessible. If it's tagged properly, if it's a PDF, and making sure that it is accessible for access technology. Because yes, I love to get the materials ahead of time. And then I get really sad when I try to open it and it's so close. So awesome. Thank you for all of this.
That's great feedback, Kathleen. I'll add a little section about awesome. Accessible materials.
Thank you.
Oh, Joe? Well, just a quick little note on this. Like, I'm just curious if also on the presentations, like for example, on the screen sharing slide, there was the acronym AT, and I wasn't familiar with that one. Would that rule of avoiding acronyms when possible, you know, also apply to these presentations?
I think that's also good feedback. Thank you.
Yeah, I thought it was a very nice presentation and really enjoyed it. So thank you so much.
Also, I found one thing that's important is one of my first transportation committee meetings, they never put the documents in LegStar, so other colleagues with vision problems couldn't read it. Mm-hmm. And I think if there are committee meetings, it should be said that if we're going to use it, then it should be also filed so everyone can see it.
Great, thank you. Kathleen?
Okay, thank you. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I want to. Yes, as you can tell, this is, I get excited about these things. So I've thought of a couple other things that can be helpful. I know it sounds feel like the meetings that I've gone to with the city have tended to be using ASL, but another great thing is to keep in mind the use of captioning, making sure that's open and the same, pausing so captioning can, people can read those captions, the open captions. So that's, you know, something I think for folks to be aware of. And I also always like to put a plug in for the use of camel case in emails and web addresses. Again, especially for when materials are shared ahead of time, screen readers have some easier access to that. And then also it is easier for folks to, as they're reading it during quickly during a presentation, if it's on a slide, having those capital letters in something like, sorry, this is the example, myvote.org. No, capital M, lowercase y, capital V, lowercase, doing it that way. It can also help when people are trying to read things during a presentation. Awesome, thank you.
Any other comments?
Thank you, Rebecca, for this. This was really, really fantastic. And I do think we should incorporate as many of these into what we do as we can and ask others to do the same. Yeah, that was my thought.
Great. Wait, I don't think we need a formal vote, but I'm sensing consensus. So I will work with Micaiah and Melissa to put together just a guide for guests, and also share that with commissioners because it can be a guide for our group as well. And if an idea comes to you after this meeting, like, please feel free to reach out by email, Casey.
Is there a place I can go to look at this after the meeting, or should I just go back to this agenda?
It is linked in the agenda and uploaded in Legistar.
Thank you.
Sure. Lynn.
Hey, I'm sorry to be remiss in remembering, but is this something that you created?
Yes, this was a training that the city did for internal audience and also for community partners. And Melissa attended, and Melissa and Nakaya asked me to share it with the commission.
Excellent. Thank you.
Is there a avenue for sharing this with other commissions as well, and like the broader audience?
Yeah, great question. I did a similar brief training for the Transportation Commission, I want to say 2 years ago. I think if we put together a guide as a commission, I'd be happy to share it with other commissions to see if they would like to adopt it as well. And the training is offered annually and is open to community partners, which includes members of boards, commissions, and committees.
I think that would be, yeah, that would be awesome to do. Because so much of what I find is these things are, you know, not done willfully, that people, you know, don't do these things. So it's, yeah, when I've similar conversations, it's welcome. So I think the more we are able to share this information readily. And I keep saying, this is done beautifully, Rebecca, in terms of assembling all these things together and representing so many different needs, that, yeah, the more folks know, I think we can really kind of tackle that ignorance that is often out there. So thank you.
Thank you. Joe?
Possibly a question for Alder Curie, that I wonder if this is something that even that city council might, you know, like, consider integrating into their meetings, just as, you know, some practices, you know, to help keep a better inclusivity for the public.
Yeah, thanks for the comment, Joe. I actually, in my mind, was thinking it could be part of new Alder orientation to kind of set the guideline. And then Alders also have access to attend those trainings. And I know our staff and common, or chief of staff, work really hard to make sure that we are aware of trainings and things to take advantage of. So yeah, thanks.
Well, thank you, Alder Curie.
This is Melissa. I'm really excited about our whole group and how everybody rallies together for everybody. So thank you.
Thank you. All right, back to you, Nakaya.
All righty, then we are going to move on to discussion items. Line item 81696, Disability Access and Equity Plan.
So this is Rebecca again. I don't have a document to share with you all this time. Oops. Did I interrupt someone? Okay. I thought I heard something. I don't have a document to share this meeting. I've incorporated your feedback to the sections that we've reviewed. And the most recent update is that we shared a draft with the mayor's office and got some additional feedback that I'll be incorporating into the plan. And then my next steps is to start reaching out to the departments and agencies that are affected or are in a position to support what's written in the plan and work with them collaboratively to kind of finalize those sections. So it will be an ongoing process. As that those things take place, I'm going to keep you updated as we go. But I just wanted to remind folks we're, I've captured your input, the public input, and now we're sort of pulling it in to get some additional feedback. So any questions on where we're at with the Disability Access and Equity Plan? Great. Thanks so much.
Okay, we're going to move on to line item 6753A, Accessible Madison Update, so we can hear from the Beyond Compliance Task Force.
That would be me, which is Melissa. Beyond Compliance Task Force actually got changed into a subcommittee. So now it's a part of Downtown Madison Incorporated. So now we have a little more say in things. Rebecca and I went up and down State Street and around Pickney and King, and Nakia joined us also. And we promoted the street eatery videos that were done through that task or through that subcommittee. And I thought that went really well. There were a lot of restaurants that were open and receptive to hear, and I just hope that word gets out and that gets concluded. And then that's all I have for that. Rebecca, is there anything I'm missing?
I don't have anything to add, but I see Jason has joined us. Jason, did you have any updates you wanted to share?
Sure. Hi, everybody. Jason Malonji. I'm the executive director at Access to Independence. Just a really quick visual description. I have short brown and gray hair, and I'm wearing a blue polo shirt and sitting outside. So pardon the birds and things chirping in the background. I'm the chair for the Beyond Compliance Task Force for our subcommittee. I got to get it right one of these days. And everything Melissa mentioned is really appreciated. One other thing that we're going to be working on is Access to Independence received a grant from the Department of Health Services called the Livable Communities Grant. And so that Livable Communities Grant is focusing on how to improve accessibility and disability inclusion in our communities to ensure folks have equal access to, live, work, and play. And so we are going to be partnering with Downtown Madison to provide accessibility consultation or technical assistance to at least two DMI members. So it could be businesses, nonprofits. They have over 500 members of that organization. And so we'll be doing that between basically September, October through the end of March. And we'll be doing that at no cost to those businesses, with the hope that it'll address some accessibility for those businesses or organizations. And also it'll provide more awareness about that work, so other businesses and organizations would be willing to do things like an accessibility evaluation of their physical space or blueprints or designs. Could be a website accessibility evaluation, an evaluation or technical assistance for events or festivals, and then training and technical assistance for employees or volunteers related to disability inclusion and access for a whole variety of, whether it's public businesses or private entities that do work that's not public facing. So quite a variety of ways that we're going to do that, but we'll be doing some outreach and promotion beginning in September, probably mid to late September that will start. And so we'll be happy to provide updates. And certainly if there's businesses that you all are familiar with that are part of Downtown Madison Incorporated, definitely encourage them to check that out and take advantage of that. Because again, it's no cost to those businesses who do that through that program. And that's my update.
Thank you. Kathleen, your hand is raised.
I had a question about the videos, if I may. So I was curious about the dining videos that were done. If those were, if there are any plans or thoughts about adding to those? Because the videos were great. I loved watching them and, you know, seeing all those great pointers and things for folks to keep in mind. But I know, you know, when I watched it and was talking with other folks in the, you know, the blind and visually impaired community, there were some additional opportunities of things that would have been great. So I just was kind of curious if anyone knew if there would be part two that might include some things that have more to address some of those needs.
I'll give a quick response. I want to acknowledge that, you know, there wasn't representation of every disability community. And I understand that that can be painful. There was intention, and maybe Jason can speak to this a little bit more, of one of our actors representing sort of the needs of folks in the visual impaired and blind community. And just with the rush of getting things together, it didn't come to fruition. So I apologize for that. The other thing is, part of the intention of this project was that it can live in the community. So even as Nakia and Melissa and I were walking around, we made our own video. Melissa found a table that was like super accessible. So we made a little video, and then I will post it with the hashtag accessibility for all. That's not something that was represented in the five videos, but is a really important perspective. So we really hope that folks will share, you know, their access needs and, you know, help this grow. My access needs aren't represented. Maybe I'll make a video too. So, you know, please contribute. Every perspective is valuable and has a place in this project. I don't know, Jason, if you have anything you want to add.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you for that, Kathleen. I appreciate that feedback. And yeah, we actually had a script and an actor identified, and we had a specific shoot day for the entity that was doing the free video production and shooting for us. And so I was really disappointed when the opportunity fell through at the very last minute. And because we had a set shoot date, it provided so little flexibility. So yeah, it wasn't, again, that doesn't make an excuse. We really should have had it, and that was the intention, but it didn't work out. And I appreciate Rebecca noting that we want to encourage folks to participate and engage and share those experiences, because it is meant to be a starting point and not the be all end all.
Thank you both. I appreciate that. And I look forward to sharing that. So thank you.
Okay, thank you. We're ready. We can move on to the updates from Transportation Commission liaison report.
They're currently, I'm no longer on the committee due to conflicts with the school board. So they're looking for a new liaison.
Okay.
Yeah. And if anyone has interest, please feel free to, don't raise your hand now, but reach out to me after the meeting or by email and let me know. That it is a pretty large time commitment. So I first want to like really thank and acknowledge Nikki for serving as our liaison. Can we give a little Zoom love for Nikki?
Love the jazz hands. Thank you.
The Transportation Commission meets the first and third Wednesday of the month at 5 on Zoom. They're, unlike our meeting, that doesn't have an end time, so sometimes that can be a full evening. So if folks are interested and available, let me know.
Any questions? Anything? No? Okay. We'll move on to the Madison Lakeway.
That's you, Melissa.
I'll let me check them, see if everything's okay. I'll give her a call. Oh, okay. She wait, I got you on speaker. I got you on speaker. Can you hear? She's having audio issues. Let me try to put.
I just sent her a message to ask to unmute. So hopefully, Melissa, you're getting a pop-up.
I didn't hear exactly what you said.
Oh, there we go. We got you.
It's from my phone, but
Oh.
keep talking. Go ahead. I'll put the phone right there.
Is once a month, different representatives from different parts of the city, the interagency department or interagency, I forget what he called it. We're going to be meeting once a month, and then there's going to be some public meetings in the future. So I won't have really anything to update for a while, except it used to be the Lake Monona Waterfront Project, and it was renamed to the Madison Lakeway. And there should be an attachment and agenda that directs you guys to that website if you would like to learn more information about it.
Does anyone need anything to be repeated? Okay. Melissa's having issues with the tech with unmuting on her computer. Okay. All right. I'll keep you on my phone just in case you want to ask a question later, if that's okay.
Thank you, sweetheart. I appreciate
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, we've taken care of that. We will move on. Let's see. We'll move on to line item 805-509, future topics, City of Madison. Are there any?
So just a preview, next month our agenda topics will be a presentation from the digital inclusion specialist with the city to talk about website accessibility, and then also a presentation about the Inspire program, which is a job shadowing program for students with disabilities. I also wanted to ask, based on our earlier conversation, if folks, one of the roles of this committee is to make recommendations around accessibility. If folks wanted to include recommendations about parks in the next meeting, my suggestion would be that you send recommendations ahead of time so that we can put them in a document and do just final tweaks and wordsmithing during the meeting. So let me know if that's something folks would like to do, or if there's other topics.
All right, if it's no questions or anything, follow up. Okay, we will move on to our reports. Line item 62729, report from the Common Council.
Hi everyone, it's JL. I'm sorry to say the word again, but I will. The update I have is about the budget again. The council held its special meeting on Tuesday, and by a large margin, the referendum asking residents to increase their property tax to help with our structural deficit will be on the ballot on November 5th. If you have any questions about the language or the referendum, I'm sure heading into the actual election date, more specific information breakdown of that language and what it means will be explained, and I can also help. What I plan to do and hopefully have a report for you next time is
things that either in collaboration with Rebecca or the DCR, line items in our budget that could put risk at the work that we're trying to advance of increasing inclusive practices and making sure that all residents of Madison have access to its resources and services. So I'm sure everyone may have different ideas about that. So, but I did want to share that just in case the referendum does not pass, we will have some very difficult decisions before us. And I want to make sure that I'm representing not just the interest of my constituents and district, but of the committees I serve on, including this one. So that's all I got for today.
Nikki's hands up. Yep.
Thank you, JL. That's really helpful also. Just putting it also for the committee to know the possibility of access to the pool, Goodman Pool, being affected by the budget cuts may have an accessibility issue because there are a lot of individuals with disabilities that use it. That's it.
Thanks for that. It's very much a hot item along with library operations, but hopefully I can break down some more specifics and what the risk could be. So thanks for that, Nikki, for Commissioner Van Mueller.
I'm doing the same with the school board stuff for our referendum. So I know what you mean.
Thank you both. We're going to move on to line item 5340, report from the Department of Civil Rights.
So we are continuing to work on the ADA transition plan revitalization for the city. As you know, we're also working on our disability access and equity plan. A couple of fun things coming up. On September 10th, I'll be hosting Disability Jeopardy at the Hawthorne Library. It's a fun way for you, whether you're like a disability history geek or this is kind of a new topic for you. It's a great way to learn and be able to ask questions. And if you have a little bit of competitive nature, it's good fun. So that'll be Hawthorne Library at 5 p.m. to 6 p.m., followed by a book discussion of Sitting Pretty by Rebecca Tolson. And if folks recall, we had a presentation from the Madison Public Library and UW-Madison about that being the book selected for Go Big Read. So I hope you all will be there. And then on...
What was the date again? I'm sorry, I did not process the date.
No problem. September 10th, Hawthorne Library, Disability Jeopardy, 5 to 6, book discussion, 6:30 to 7:30. And then the next event coming up, the
October 12th.
On October 16th, it will be the film screening of Bottom Dollars, which is the film about subminimum wage employment. And that will be followed by a discussion moderated by Cheryl Bates Harris of the National Disability Rights Network, and Cindy Bentley, who is the director of the Wisconsin Board of People with Developmental Disabilities and a former employee in subminimum wage employment. So that will be an excellent event that is hosted by the city's Disability Resource Group, which is our staff affinity group and sponsored by Department of Civil Rights.
Also, there's another book reading. I think it's October 12th, another book panel that I'm on for the Go Big Read.
Yes, the October 12th. And remind me, Nikki, what library is that at? I think I'm moderating
the Central one. I think it's Central Library.
Central Library, October 12th. So lots of
amazing. And yes, you are moderating.
Opportunities to engage with our community coming up. So thanks, everyone.
All right. Any questions?
Can you just email those out? I cannot keep all those dates and times and places in my head fast enough to get them my computer.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
That would be hugely helpful.
All right. We'll move on to line item 24056, report from the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Humanitarian Award Commission.
No update since our next meeting is next Monday, and we haven't met since the prior DR Disability Rights Commission meeting.
All right. Well, thank you. Well, seems like we've handled all of our business. And the time.
Motion to adjourn.
It is 6:17. Can I just say that?
Yay.
Did you see that?
That's unheard of.
Okay. So we're done. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
And is there a second?
Seconded.
All in favor? Not opposed. Good night. It's so good seeing you all. Oh my God.
Good night,
everybody.
Have a good night.
Bye.